Traveling can be one of life's most enjoyable experiences. We'll give you some tips, hints, and experiences from a blogger that travels the world on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, those are my babies. As always, thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah! Travel blogger Jennifer Ward is with us today. And I'm curious, how accurate is the news or the media when capturing your experiences, what they were, what they will be when you're traveling to a foreign country?
I always tell everyone everything is a lie.
Wow.
So once you actually get there, it is so much different than you would ever expect to see or do. So definitely get out and travel. Your eyes will be open to just how false a lot of the narratives are around places, even the places where people consider very dangerous or unhappy or unsafe. It's much different.
Give me an example.
Russia.
Wow,
so
really?
I went to Russia 2 years ago. I was pretty worried about it because, you know, our relations with Russia haven't been all that great. So I went there thinking, like, okay, everyone's going to hate Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why am I really going here? Will I be okay? Will I be safe? And Russia is one of the best countries I went to.
So
you just have to understand the culture there.
Mm-hmm.
They're very direct. So, you know, here in the U.S., where we're kind of very nice and more, especially if you're Southern, there's a lot of different niceties involved in just everyday conversation. They're very direct,
mm-hmm.
but they were fine. Like, I had no problems, no issues. People went out their way to show us where to go, and I had a really good time.
Why'd you go, given that you, well, I mean, if you believe it's all a lie, I can understand that you would think that they were going to be something different than what the normal story that we hear is. But that's, when I asked you for an example, you hit it out the park. I didn't know, I thought you were going to say Cuba or,
Syria.
Wow, yeah. But you said Russia, that's the quote-unquote
enemy. The quintessential. I don't know, for me they seem like they used to be the enemy, but go on, Jen.
No, really. I mean, that's why it was such a surprise,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, Russia's always like the U.S. arch enemy, and it's like, okay, no matter where you go, you think Russia's going to be the worst, and they're going to hate us, but that is such a false narrative.
Mm.
There are other Americans that are living, working, fine. You know, the government is stricter compared to our government,
mm-hmm.
but you don't really have a lot of problems. And we went during a time where it was Russia's, it's kind of like their version of 4th of July, where they show their military strength and they bring out all their old war planes, and there's a big army presentation. Everybody comes out and drinks in the streets, and, like, it's a huge celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were actually in a hotel. We were right in the middle, so we got to see all this set up during the week we were there. And we actually went to the celebrations. And when we came back to our hotel, we watched the American media, because they actually show CNN U.S. and they show CNN International version.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we were on the U.S. version. And the U.S. version is like, Russia is trying to show the military strength. They're gearing up for war. We need to be worried. And it's like,
oh my gosh.
Is not what that's happening at all right now. We couldn't believe our eyes. We're like, if I wasn't here, I would believe this. But that's not what it was.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the same as if our 4th of July of getting everything together and, you know, showing off our planes, you know, how the blue stars fly, and then everybody drinks in the streets and goes on to be happy. That's what they were doing. But
who's
that was not portrayed correctly in the media.
Who's we? Who were you there with?
I was there with a friend. She actually lives in Chicago. She's always wanted to go to Russia as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a mutual friend from a friend that's actually from Ukraine.
Mm.
And so she was in Russia during a time working. And so she's like, oh, I'll meet you, because she speaks Russian. She's like, and I can, you know, show you around, that way you won't be so nervous, because we were just a little afraid. But wow. We had a great time. So.
And when you say the government stricter, you got an example of how you perceived or experienced the government to be stricter?
Yeah, so just actually trying to get to Russia is a very interesting experience. Mm. So when you want to go, I'm so used to, like, with any country I want to go to, I just file the information, like a visa maybe online. You know, you usually get it back the same day. It's all electronic. It's pretty easy to get your visa. The only other country is China, where you have to kind of go to, like, an embassy within the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
For Russia, you can't just book something. You actually have to be formally invited by someone.
Mm. Okay.
So we actually booked a hotel. I went through Marriott, and then Marriott sent me my official invitation to come visit them in the country of Russia, and then I had to use that to get my visa. So it was much stricter in, compared to any other visa process that I went through. I know, like, just in the streets and everything, you have more of, like, instead of just the regular police, it's more of an army presence.
Mm-hmm.
But they're fine. They're just very serious, so, you know, and you're not going to really be horse playing around, like kind of what you would do here in the States.
And no horse playing, you mean with the police or just with each other?
Period.
Or with the police. I know here you can kind of joke around and everything, but they are, like, when they have security entrances, it's very straightforward of, you know, come through, they wand you for certain events and everything, and it's, there's no joking around that.
No small talk. No, hey, how you
They're
doing?
They're not allowing you to distract them.
No, none of that. Gotcha. It's just go in, go through. I'm providing a job and a service.
Wow.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get each week's show. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please share it with your friends and family on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring, the consummate generalist.
Good morning, Frank.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Oh, man. What? I just got back into town a few hours ago.
I was ready to say.
From wherever I was, Antigua.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
just,
Antigua.
Yeah.
It's beautiful there.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
The beach we found it took us to, it was so beautiful. I mean, it was almost like a shrine beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
A shrine of nature or something like that.
Yeah.
Incredible. We've got a special guest today that'll help us, speaking of traveling, our guest will help us develop an understanding of international travel. I kind of feel like I should have talked to her before I left. But, you know, we'll save whatever she's going to teach us today, right, for the next trip. Today's guest grew up traveling with her grandparents, who encouraged her to explore the world. This seed germinated in a selection of college based on her ability to travel and subsequently a semester in Madrid. She notes, "I always dreamed of exploring the world, but I thought I had to be rich to do it." And as far as I know, she isn't rich yet, but she has managed to visit 34 countries and is anxiously awaiting the 35th this year as she turns 35.
Wow.
She's a baby.
Impressive.
Traveling the world.
World, yeah.
So, if you, like me, want to know how a young woman who isn't rich has managed to travel so extensively, which countries are the most welcoming, and how to get the most out of any trip that you take, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks about international travel with none other than Jennifer Ward of the blog Where'sJennifer.com. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello.
Of course. Before we get too deep in today's subject matter, Maybe we already gotten deep into it. I want to check in to see what's going on either in the news or in your life or in my life or something like that.
Oh, wow. Jennifer, in my life.
Yeah. Hmm. Jennifer, please don't be bashful. We want, you know, you weigh into.
We want to know what's going on in your life too, Jen, when you're on the ground.
Particularly around relationships or that kind of thing.
Yeah, all that traveling.
Yeah, that's right.
Makes things a little dicey.
You could get
or interesting.
Little, some romance going on.
A guy in every port.
Right. Why is she putting you out there, Jennifer?
I take it back. Yes, two guys in every port.
She's got, I like the way you think.
She's got three at the port of Baltimore.
Don't listen to him. I deny, deny, deny. I'm
okay.
Innocent.
She's got one at the harbor of D.C. and two at the port
of
Baltimore.
One at the harbor of D.C. is certainly a possibility. Go on, Jen.
I won't tell my secrets, but no. Dating on the road, it is very interesting because for work, I travel every week.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just trying to make sure I fit in that time to date and scheduling in time of meeting people. Of course, online dating is the easiest for me because I'm always gone somewhere. However, I do notice I tend to meet people more in foreign countries than I actually do when I'm at home. So I don't know if it's because when you're on vacation and you're just free and happy and you just attract more people. Because usually when I'm at home, it's like an errand mode of trying to get things done before I do my next trip. So.
Now, you said you travel each week, and so does that mean you travel domestically and you for work, and then the international travel is a whole other piece?
Yes.
Okay.
So each week I travel domestically for work. So right now I'm working in the great state of Indiana, and I just fly back and forth every week. So I usually fly out on Mondays and fly back home on Thursdays.
But that's just to Indiana?
That's just to Indiana.
From where?
And
where
then,
are you from? Where do you? Where
from
you?
Dallas.
Gotcha.
Okay, wow. Okay.
I live in Dallas, Texas, yes.
Okay.
So, and I kind of chose Dallas because they have two major airports in the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Usually my contract's around 6 months of work, so I'm always in a different spot. Before I was in Indianapolis, I was actually in San Diego, California.
Okay.
So.
All right, Nancy.
It's different here.
Yes.
I got one for both of you all.
Mm.
Do couples, particularly married couples, need to be best friends? Jeff, I expect you to have something to say on this one.
I don't know. My best friend might be listening.
Notice he said his best friend might be listening.
Yes.
You think they do?
Well,
it's helpful.
You're spending most of your time with that person.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe.
No, I've been married a lot. 32 years.
Uh-huh.
The relationship has changed. Mm-hmm. It changes every 6 months or so,
mm-hmm.
noticeably. You know, like, what are we doing now that we weren't doing then? Mm-hmm. Kids, social life, social structure, jobs, geography, all of that stuff. If you're not with your best friend through that journey, you should be. So whether she's been my best friend or I have made her that and vice versa,
mm-hmm.
That's the existence. That's why we lasted so long.
So whether she was naturally or whether you became it, like, in,
out of circumstance.
That's interesting.
The single most important thing we have in common are our kids.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't the case when we got married.
Uh-huh.
And now we don't deal with that every day because our kids are gone and out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the single most important thing that mm-hmm. we care about. And then you've got financial things to deal with, and you become a team.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be a teammate with your best friend.
So would you say you were best friends when you got married, or that relationship has evolved?
She was one of my best friends.
One of your best friends. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my friends became her friends, and vice versa.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of gets weeded out
mm-hmm.
as your life progresses. Mm-hmm. Some people stay 18.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I get
Some
it.
People say stay single and aren't comfortable in the social situations. You know, all that stuff
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that goes into it. So, yeah, we're sharing experiences.
I got it. Okay.
I did a one-minute short a few days ago, and I mean, share kind of where my thoughts are on the matter. I don't think couples need to be best friends. In fact, I consider, when I say best friends, I mean chums and that sort of thing. And like you're best friends with a buddy, that sort of thing. Not so much you become by circumstance. But anyway, I hear people say you need to be best friends with your partner, and that I don't resonate with that, because it feels destructive. It feels like the people who are saying that are preaching. And if you're preaching that to someone who doesn't feel that way with their partner, then it potentially leads to one partner saying to the other, well, how come we're not best friends? Or how come we're not best friends? And looking at that person as though it's somebody's fault. How come you don't treat me like I'm your best friend? What's your problem? And that kind of thing, and start to finger pointing instead of just kind of allowing a relationship to be what it is. And not only that, but people get married for different reasons. Some people get married for money and status and sex and that sort of thing. And if those are the things, you may not spend most of your time with that person. You may not even want to. You may just want to share a household, combine resources, and that sort of thing.
That whole dynamic you just described, just take out the word best friend and you could put in any other adjective. Look at what he bought her.
Yeah.
Look at what she does for him.
Yes.
He comes home every night and she has dinner on the table.
Yes.
All of those things that could be envious to another couple.
Yes.
That's where destruction.
Yes.
That doesn't start. That's where it can be destructive to a relationship.
Yes.
You can't compare.
You cannot compare.
If you notice, I didn't preach, hey, my wife's my best friend. I answered your question.
Yeah.
I had to think about it. Mm-hmm. Would I rather go to a ball game with my best friend, with another guy that I can drink five beers and have five hot dogs and blah, blah, blah? Yeah.
In
if
peace.
If I go to have five hot dogs at the ball game and I'm with my wife, no. It ain't going to happen. What are you doing? What are you eating?
How
many
beers
you're driving home? Blah, blah, blah. I would still go to a game with my wife. We're going tonight, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. I would still go to a ball game with my wife. She likes, and I like the camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
But we're on different levels in terms of our interest in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Music, same thing. I mean, these are common interests. Mm-hmm. You don't have common interests with your spouse, then you go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that has nothing to do with sex. Although that's probably one of the things that breaks up those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So anything where someone goes, look at it. We have a neighbor who, he gets up in the morning real early. He goes to work before his wife. Before he leaves, he brings her a cup of coffee in bed every day.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife would jokingly say, see, look what he does. Wouldn't that be nice? I'm like, yeah, wouldn't it?
That's what a best friend
would
say.
She's not envious. She's just noticing it. If it gets to the point where you are envious of how someone runs their life, then there's more problems, I think, deeper in the relationship.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Jennifer,
you get.
I kind of help with you a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I think that you should at least be somewhat friendly. I know people get married for different reasons, but I think the marriages that tend to stand the test of time, the people at least consider themselves as friends, usually best friends. Like at least most of the marriage I see that really work.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to have friends outside that, so I would think your spouse is like your best friend, but you also have like a best friend outside the relationship where you do hang out with and do things.
Okay. All right. Okay, Jennifer, on to the good stuff. What's the hardest part about traveling?
The hardest part about traveling is missing your family.
Hmm.
So sometimes when you go places, especially if you go, like I do a lot of solo traveling, and you go alone and you'll see things that will remind you of certain family members, and you're like, oh, I wish they could be here and see this, or family members that have passed on, you know, different things will spark you and be like, oh, they would have loved this. I wish they could be here. So that can be the hardest part for me. It's more of an emotional thing. Logistic stuff, you kind of tend to get down after a while, but, you know, just missing family.
Yeah, I could relate. When we were away, as we were walking into the house at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, I'm saying to my wife, we get to see our babies, gonna see our babies. And,
wow.
You know, walk in the house and just
that's
to go.
Sweet.
It is sweet. But
yeah.
I love those little jokers.
I missed them.
I missed them quite a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you pack, what do you leave home that many people would pack? or take that many people wouldn't?
Well, things I like to pack. I like to pack my own bar soap. I have sensitive skin, so I like my Dove. Mm-hmm. And then I like my shower shoes. That way, no matter what hotel you go to, some of them are really good about keeping things clean. Some of them are a little sketchy. So I usually have flip-flops I take everywhere with me.
Me too.
That way you can use them in the shower or use them like when you're just walking around in your room.
Uh-huh.
And then just making sure you have your electronics and backup batteries because I love to take a lot of pictures. So my camera, my laptop, a lot of times I'll take a tablet that way I have something smaller I can view. Mm-hmm. When I'm on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm doing an international trip, I'll leave my main laptop at home and only take my tablet. Because a lot of times there's an issue with theft, just depending on where you go. So
theft.
That way the tablet I won't miss is $100. And also I don't have all my work stuff on it. So I don't have to worry about, you know, trying to, you know, restore all that data.
You mean theft when you're out of the room? Theft from somebody walking up to you, knocking you in the head? What are the areas of thievery?
So sometimes in your room, I know hotels try to crack on this and make sure they have reputable workers, but I have had friends that had laptops stolen. It hasn't happened to me, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I better knock on wood and make sure it doesn't happen this weekend.
Yep.
And then also, like, there has been an issue with security. And when you're going through security at the airport, they've been stealing things.
Really?
I know there was a huge bust a couple weeks ago, actually, yeah. And especially here in New York, through Newark, a lot of times, you know, like you have a lot of Indian citizens, they travel with a lot of gold. Like, that's just like a culture thing.
Uh-huh.
And so people were stealing gold out of their bags as they were going through security. And you don't notice until you get home or get to your destination. So definitely you have to kind of watch out for those things you don't really think about. When I pack, I always have like a bag that I take on the plane with me,
mm-hmm.
just making sure I have my laptop and my electronics. You always want to keep your meds and your glasses always with you on your person. You never want to check that stuff in. So I've actually had a couple of friends that's checked in their laptops and their luggage, and they come back, and it's destroyed, of course.
Yeah.
And they're always surprised. So.
I was on a flight recently where my carry-on was, for the sake of the conversation, it was stolen. My carry-on was stolen. And it wasn't until, so I got off the plane. And when I was letting the people know that when I got off the plane, there was still another bag on the flight. Didn't look like mine, but it was another bag there. And they were like, is this yours? And I said, no, it's absolutely not mine. So I got off the bag, went to the counter. They said, most likely the person is going to bring it back.
Right.
Once they figure out it's not theirs and that they left this one. And that is ultimately what happened. I gave them my phone number. They called me while I was there in the airport, and the bags got swapped out. But even when you carry bags with you on a plane,
you have to be mindful.
You got to be mindful of
it. If I carry a bag onto the plane, then ideally I want to keep it under my seat.
See,
unless it's too big.
I can't do that because I'm a man, and I just.
What does that mean?
See,
you just put it. I mean, the thing. I'm not talking about a pocketbook. Sometimes you can have a carry-on that just snugly fits under the seat in front of you. That's like legal.
Jeff, do you know what I mean when
you
I say
that you want to stretch your feet out, right? So you stick it under and take off, and then like once you get in the sky, just bring it underneath your feet, and so you can still stick your feet out. But now it's more kind of under your feet.
The infamous issue of a leg room. Huh, not a problem.
I want to hear Jeff weigh in to see if my man theory is correct.
Absolutely. There's nothing in the seat in front of me, under the seat in front of me. Maybe my laptop, because I can put my feet on it during takeoff.
Oh, got it.
And then pick it right. I mean,
okay.
Put it up,
okay.
Put it in the seat.
Okay.
I flew coach to South Africa once. 14 hours.
Whoa.
With a woman who slept most of the time right next to me on my shoulder.
Who was not his best friend.
Not my best friend.
Or his wife.
Another traveler. But and I was up walking down the aisles and everything.
Oh,
just,
gosh.
How are you going to sit for 14 hours? How are you going to sit for 2 hours?
Yeah.
And
I don't think it's a guy thing. You want space.
I think it's a guy thing. I need every square inch of leg room I can come up with.
Whoa.
Everything goes above. The only reason I'm going to keep something under or below on the floor. It's like he said, if it's the laptop, I can get away with just picking it up as soon as the plane lets, you know, right. gets in the air.
It's a minor thing. I can tell you. It's Let me just tell you as a funny. My mother, when she travels, you talk about idiosyncratic things you travel with, you got to have. My mother travels with her own pillow.
Oh, that's, I understand that.
I'm like, Mom, she's got to have it.
I've got this blow-up pillow that you can lean forward on.
Lean forward on? Yes,
it's like it almost blows up into a cube, and so you can lean forward and sleep on it. It's great. My wife stole it from me on this trip.
At least you guys went home together. You can get it back.
Now she loves it and swears by it. Jennifer, do you know what I'm talking about the lean pillow?
What you're talking about? Because me and my friends, I've seen those in a little Air Sky Mall. We used to always make fun of it. It's like a pillow you blow up, you can hold on.
Yes.
But they will always show the person like in the middle seat. And like, I don't know if they'd be all that comfortable, but yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I use it. Yes.
Okay.
So I'm with Mom. Bring your own pillow. Do your thing. If you need to bring your snacks, bring your snacks.
Snacks you got to bring now.
But okay. Yeah. Back to the women, men thing.
Mm.
My wife doesn't move when she sleeps much. She can have a husband and children laying on her and be fine. I can't do that. You get off me.
You can't snuggle?
I can snuggle with her, yes.
Okay.
But I still need to be able to move. But if she's got kids, can't be anywhere near me. Get away from me. This is my space. Get on the floor. Sleep on the floor. Don't sleep in the bed. If you're going to sleep in the bed, get on the mommy side. But all of this to say, my wife can stuff everything under her legs on the plane. And not move.
Sleep.
She's cool. I need my space. And I want the aisle seat.
What if you can't get it? You travel a lot.
Well, then I'm irritated.
And I got to get over myself.
But, you know, I'm
irritated.
I'm irritated. Okay. And not only that, if I'm traveling on my own dime, see, this is about Jennifer, and I'm running my mouth about me, but.
This is the average show.
If I'm paying on my own dime, I refuse to pay for selecting your seat.
Oh, got
it. I won't do that. You just got to put me in a seat.
Me either.
I can't stand the fact that they actually are charging me to pick an aisle.
Well, they're charging people who would say if I don't get the seat I want, I'd be irritated.
They're turning that into an income stream.
Mm. Of course, someone like me who says, I want the aisle seat or the window seat, and I'm willing to gamble, they can't get my $10.
Yeah. What's up with you, Jennifer? You got an issue with your seat placement?
I do. I like the window. I hate the aisle seats because there's always somebody coming by brushing past you, or I feel like all the coffers always get up and walk up and down the aisle. Like, I need to be by the window and have, like, at least this one little small space where there's no one touching me.
Mm.
So.
Don't touch me.
And then I like to look out the window. So for me, it kind of helps me get my bearings of like where we're at and what's going on.
Uh-huh.
So.
And See, it's interesting to hear people's rationale. She wants one side where nobody's touching her, but it's a wall. I want one side where there's nobody touching me, but it's space.
Right. You know,
I could stick my foot out into the aisle if I can get away with it for as long as I can and not bother anybody when I want to get up and walk, because I want to get up and walk. I don't want to sit there for that trip. I want to stand in the back and just
stand. You don't meditate yet. Is that correct?
No, I do. I just, I maybe need to,
Onward.
Yeah, I'm just nuts.
Jennifer, thank you for being on the show this morning as we crawl into the mind of Frank Love. Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we never talked about my travel behaviors before.
Indeed, but we'll get to it.
Go on.
Well, the Airbnb thing was actually a curiosity of mine as it relates to Jennifer's travels. So do you ever use it?
Or do you ever rent your place for it to make money to travel?
True.
I don't rent my place for it because I'm very particular about how my things are in my apartment. So I don't want to feel like someone's going through my things. So I don't ever rent my place out. Even though that's really a good missed financial opportunity there. I do rent them myself. And when I rent, I tend to rent places where I know the person has more than one listing. Because usually with that, they're truly running it like a business, and it tends to be cleaner, nicer, and they don't interfere as much. So that's what I look for when I'm looking at Airbnbs.
Do you?
And when I rent, I like to rent like the whole place to myself. I don't like to share like a room with someone.
And where have you done the Airbnb thing? Have you done it internationally or just on the domestic side?
I've only done a domestic side so far, but I do want to do it internationally. So far, I did it in Miami. And Miami's an interesting bunch because a lot of the Airbnbs there, like on South Beach, they're part of what they call like a condo hotel. So you could own a condo unit within a hotel, but then you just turn around and rent it back out. So it's kind of like you're owning a part of a hotel room and renting it out for your own fees, for your own income. So I did a couple of those in Miami. And then in New Orleans, what I'm doing, I'm actually renting a place. It's like a two-bedroom, two-bath for a month in October. So that's going to be my longest time in an Airbnb. So and just so I can like, go down and experience the city and have somewhere to stay.
Are you the only person going? You're going to have two bedrooms to yourself, or is somebody else going with you?
I am the only person going. I do have one weekend where I have a friend that's having a wedding down there, so I have family members and friends coming to spend the time with me. I have invited other people, so even though I'm going alone, I have a feeling that every week somebody else will come and visit me at the Airbnb, so it'll be good.
Okay, a few more etiquette things. I think we're discovering something about me. I'm a little weirder than I knew I was.
Oh, my gosh.
You didn't know.
You're always the last to know, Frank.
Raising the window on the airplane, you just mentioned it. Any is there an etiquette that is appropriate? How do you deal with that? Let's say you like the window. If someone...
Yes, I do.
So I assume... Since you want to get your bearings, you prefer the window to be up, the thing to be up. How do you deal with that? Or how are there rules to raising the window or not?
Unspoken rules, you mean?
Rules, spoken or unspoken, either one.
So a lot of times if you're taking a super early morning flight and there's a lot of sunlight coming in, you can kind of take your cues from the flight attendants. They'll either dim the lights actually within the cabin itself. And so when I notice that most people are sleeping, I'll keep my window closed and just peek out every so often so I can actually see what's going on there. I know with takeoff and landing, you do have to have your windows open. A lot of people still try to keep them closed, but they like for you to have that open. And a lot of people like to actually watch themselves land. So even if they don't look out any other part of the trip, a lot of times you see the aisle people, kind of doing a little head jog of like, oh, what's going on out there as you're landing or taking off.
And you care about those things.
I try to follow my cues from the cabin.
Gotcha. And what about leaning back your seat? Is there any...
I do not lean back my seat. Yes, because the thing is, nowadays, the space between the seats is small, super small nowadays. So, like, if I'm not in, like, Economy Plus, I'm just in, like, the regular coach seats. Which I hate now that they have that Economy Plus. I think everybody should be Economy Plus. I'm tall, and it rubs against my knees. And so I'm maybe like 5'9", so I can't imagine for other people that are taller, like what is going to them. So I don't lean my seat back. And also, like, the seats don't lean back that much more anyway, so I'm not going to get that much comfort for myself, and I'm just going to be, annoying the person behind me.
Ever fly Spirit Airlines?
I did one time, and I would never do it again. I booked a trip out to Miami, going from Las Vegas. At the time, I was working in Las Vegas. And that was the smallest plane I felt like I've ever been on, like, for a seat width, like, in height. My knees hurt the whole time. They were just a mess, like, getting my luggage, getting fees for everything. Like, at the time, I think it cost $10 to print your boarding pass. It was crazy. So... on the flight back, I ended up canceling that flight and booking another one on Southwest because it wasn't worth it to me.
There you go.
Oh, you were serious about not.
I was serious. I was like, no more.
Have you taken one of the flights where you can lie down and sleep? The one
on
the internationals?
I have taken those.
You have or you have not?
So I have.
Okay.
So my favorite one would probably have been on United Airlines.
Okay.
I was flying to Japan, to Tokyo, and I was able to get, like, the... Because I use, like, a lot of miles that I get from work, mm-hmm. and was able to book, like, the first-class ticket. Mm-hmm. So you get fully lied back, and it's really nice. I'm like, oh, this is how the other half live. Like, oh, when you're ready for your bed, just let us know, and we'll make your bed. So, of course, I got to take advantage of this service. Like, why not?
Yeah,
you get up, and then they put the seat down all the way, and they actually put, like, a little mini mattress pad on it.
Yes.
And give you sheets, and then you can lay down and sleep the whole time. It was wonderful.
First class is not a game.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It is something special.
Yes.
I've only flown first class. Get this. My wife tells this story all the time. I cannot. She tells this story. All right. We were flying to California.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two legs. One was from D.C. to Philly, of all places.
Nowhere.
Well, they upgraded me.
To first class. Going from D.C. to Philly.
Going to D.C. to
Five
Philly.
5 minutes.
A half-hour flight.
Right. Just the taste of how
right,
the
other right. And
was.
I took it. And she is like, you left me in coach?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I had never flown.
Did you send her a drink back or anything?
No, nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
It was only a few minutes.
This is why he has no interest in being best friends. This partner, I knew it would come out. Yeah. I knew it. I just was waiting. Okay, Frank, go on. I'd be telling this story all the time too.
All right. Well, she definitely tells it. My half hour flight to Philly. I abandoned her.
It's 5 minutes of fame in
right.
first class. Oh my! So wait, let's talk about the money because people are gonna say, "How do you afford to travel?" So you afford to travel because. Well, sometimes because you're traveling all the time for work, which for some people
yes.
wouldn't count if they don't travel all the
but
time.
But she gets
for work.
Points and miles.
But
yeah, got
even
that.
Even if you get miles that I use, and so a lot of times I actually use the miles for upgrading my flights to like first class when I'm doing like the longer haul flights.
Okay.
But don't really, you don't have to travel every week to be able to afford to travel.
Okay.
So I have a lot of friends that don't travel at all for work, and they go a lot of places too.
Okay.
You need to travel during the off season. So I know, like, just depending if you have kids, you know, planning it can be a little bit harder. But August is, like, a huge travel month, like, for Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are on vacation in Europe and the prices go up. So if you just go 1 month later in September, it's still warm enough, the sun is still up late enough, and prices usually drop by half. So
wow.
I always try to, like, travel within the off season and make everything much cheaper. That way you can actually do it.
Okay.
Also, Living Social and Groupon have, like, great and amazing deals that they do. I've actually booked a few because at first I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to book a trip through them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually pretty legit. And what I do to actually extend a lot of those trips is, like, with Groupon, you'll have, like, a five-day one where, you know, you have the hotel for 5 nights and it includes your flights and some meals.
It does
what
include
I'll
your
do
flight?
Actually, it does.
Some of them, yeah.
Okay.
Just depending on the one you book, yeah. A lot of times they'll include breakfast at, like, your particular hotel.
Mm-hmm.
What I usually do is tell them, okay, if it's 5 days, but I know I want to go full seven, I actually tell them to book my return trip out on that seventh day, and then I'll just cover the hotel myself
mm-hmm.
on the other 2 days. And a lot of times you can call the hotel directly. Like, I've emailed them or called them and say, hey, I want to spend 2 extra days. Is there a discount you can give me? I'm already going to be there a certain amount of time. And a lot of times they'll honor, like, a discount because you're already going to be there, and they want the extra money. So
okay.
that's something a lot of people don't think about
mm-hmm.
That I use to extend trips.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So basically what I hear you saying is for those individuals who do not rack up a great deal of frequent flyer points and that sort of thing, you can do Living Social, you can do Groupon, and you can fly during the off season. Is that right?
Yes. Definitely fly through the off season. Also, follow like a few Twitter accounts. Like there's Airfare Watchdog, the Points Guy. A lot of times they post travel deals
mm-hmm.
as the airlines post them in real time. So even if you don't want to go through Groupon or Living Social, you can go through that way. That way you can book Airbnb when you get there.
Mm.
I know like right now United's having a great sale because everyone's having the travel war from L.A. to Sydney, Australia.
Uh-huh.
And so right now they have a round trip from California for $700 to Australia, to Sydney.
Mm. Okay.
So definitely look into, like, things like that. Because normally where, you know, it might be like a $1,300 flight, Now you can get it for $700, so that's more money you can either spend when you're in Australia or spend on accommodations. You can also book Airbnb out there.
There's a website that exists and kind of a dynamic that exists where people, let's say I want to fly to L.A. and no, let's say I want to fly to Indianapolis and that flight may be $500. But if I fly to L.A., I mean to Chicago. Indianapolis, okay. With a on a flight that's ultimately going to L.A. So if I buy connecting. The ticket to L.A. Mm-hmm. and it stops in Indianapolis and I get off, I might get the flight might be less expensive going to L.A. than Indianapolis. And some people, there's a website that even tells you what those connectings are. What is it called?
Yeah. I cannot think of the name of the website right now, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
What do you think
of
that?
And they're actually cracked down on that. Mm-hmm. So I don't really suggest you do that as much anymore because they've turned around and made a business model out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's much more attention on it. So a lot of times if you do get off that flight,
and you don't take the connect.
Using like your frequent flyer miles and numbers and stuff, like you kind of get blacklisted a little bit now.
Really?
So they'll just want to make sure... You just want to make sure that you use that wisely and not too often for all your trips. And if you do get off in Indianapolis but don't go all the way to L.A., if you had a return trip booked, that's automatically canceled.
Whoa. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. I needed to know
so
that.
Indeed.
So it's good if you book something like that, you need to book those as one ways and not as round trips.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get off at the flight in Indianapolis, if you booked a round trip, they're automatically going to cancel the rest of your reservation. And so I know airlines, they've been kind of concentrating on, like, changing that practice because a lot of people were doing it and it was getting more popular and they were realizing, like, oh, we're kind of losing money on this.
Mm.
So that is something they've kind of started focusing on within the last 4 months or so, mm-hmm. I've noticed.
You went to Cuba. In fact, you did a recent blog post about it. What you got?
Yeah.
What was Cuba like?
Cuba is absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, don't believe the media. Don't believe the hype. It's not just all horrible and everybody's sad and waiting for America to save them. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
The people there, there's a very strong, rich culture there. Mm-hmm. They're very proud to be Cuban, and now I say Cubans that live there are the worst representation of them because they actually really do love their country,
mm-hmm.
which is great, and they love being there. It's a country with a lot of highly educated people. A lot of people go to college and they have degrees. They take care of their people. And kind of like, almost kind of similar to Russia, I thought like there would be police in the street and more military or anything, but you don't have that at all. Like, I rarely saw the police. Everything was very safe, very low crime, didn't have any problems. And they would make fun of us as Americans, like, oh, I bet you're happy that you're not going to get shot while you're just walking around down the street.
Oh.
And you said, oh, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
But, they kind of had a point because I'm originally from North St. Louis, and there, as you know, there's a lot of gun crime there. So it was very different, very eye-opening. Mm-hmm. Because you always think of Cuba, you always think of, like, I don't know if you remember Elian Gonzalez.
Yeah.
From
way back when they, like, snatched him out of Towson, and they're like, oh, he's going to go back to Cuba and everything.
As though that was the bad thing.
They're just like, we take care of our people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we wish the embargo was in, but we're very prideful, and we love our country. So, you know, very interesting.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with international travel blogger Jennifer Ward. Jennifer schooling us on the ways of the world from a well-traveled experience. Jennifer, how can our listeners find you and what you're up to?
I'm blogging now at wheresjennifer.com, and that's without the apostrophe.
Okay.
And I just kind of restarted my website, I mean my blog, because I had things out there already from like other trips I've taken, but I wanted to do a different direction, so I wanted to be more photo blog, like mm-hmm. just focusing on the photos and just seeing for yourself what it looks like. Because I feel like there's so much information about all the different countries you have out there, but I want to focus on the parts that's less seen. So that's what I'm doing.
Is solo travel dangerous? And have you ever hitchhiked?
I haven't hitchhiked. Mm-hmm. I like to kind of know where I'm going ahead of time. But it's not as dangerous as you think. I went to Turkey in October I was originally supposed to go to Morocco, and so France backed out the last minute. And with all of the political issues, I was like, you know what? Let me go to Turkey right now, like while I still can. Mm-hmm. So I went, solo female traveler, didn't have anything really planned out. I just booked my first night in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And then once I got there, I actually worked with the hotel to find, like, reputable companies to work with and booked the rest of my trip using, like, you know, buses and trains and everything. So you can definitely do it. You just have to do your research, but don't be afraid at all.
And so you've discussed the police in Russia. You've discussed the police in Cuba. Any other stories around the police, or, you know, especially given the stories around the police in the States these days?
Yeah. So when dealing with foreign police, well, the first thing I say is don't commit a crime. So I know a lot of people like to go places and have drugs. Like if you're in Asia, it's much stricter than any other place, especially the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Can't have drugs on you or around you. And you have people try to do, like...
the legal thing.
Just like little crazy things. Like every time you watch, like, you know, I got locked up abroad, it's always around drugs and stuff. Uh-huh. But, like, I really have a problem with the police abroad. And I think it's because I'm a tourist. So when you're a tourist, I think their guard is down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be okay with you. I know sometimes just depending on what some European countries, like if you go into like the party zones, they might, because a lot of times you might have people from other countries that are prostitutes. Mm-hmm. And so they'll come and they'll kind of look at you. But once they find out you're American, then it's like you have a free pass. People are like, oh, okay, you're fine. There's no problem here. Mm. Which is kind of interesting dynamic to get around in your head.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
And what? So, yeah. How do you find that you as a black woman have been treated? You are a black woman, correct?
Yes, I am.
Have been treated in other countries.
You know, it's interesting. Once they find out I'm American, then they treat us great. They know a lot about black history. Everybody loves black music, and then you're going to get a lot of questions about black, like American culture. But once I'm in countries, and sometimes you get looks. If they think you're African, they tend to be mean, which I found kind of troubling. It's like, I don't understand what's going on here, you know, and the political issues around that. But then once they find out you're American, they treat you completely different. So that was something I had to kind of get used to and wrap my head around.
Okay.
That was something I was surprised about because I thought, like, oh, you're black, I was going to look at you as criminal. But if you're black American, they like you. But then black from other places, they tend to... kind of treat you depending on, like, how their country relationship is with that particular country.
It's a nationalistic thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Very nationalistic. Yeah.
So not necessarily racial or the color of your skin. It has to do with your nationality. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because when I would go, especially, like, in Spain. Spain is one of my favorite places to be. You know, like, if you go to South, you know, you might have a good look, but once you start speaking, they can hear that American accent, then... they completely change towards you. They're nice and they're accommodating and welcoming. So that's it's a little bit different. It's like, oh, like my nationality works, you know, more in my favor than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're black and American, you look at the racial issues here, you think like, okay, I'm going to be hated everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I always tell my friends, like, if you can deal with racism in America, everything else will be a breeze. You won't have any problems. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
What is a country that the Spanish may have had an issue with if they found you to be from that
somewhere
country?
Somewhere else, yeah.
I think right now they have, there are a lot of African immigrants coming into Spain through, like, Morocco, like, at the bottom part. And so I think it's more kind of like with the U.S., the anti-immigration. They feel like people are coming and taking their jobs and everything. Mm-hmm. So once they found out I was American, then they were okay with me.
Gotcha.
But if they thought I was African, like specifically North African, then they might have thought I was an immigrant or something and like had a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. So the American is the international grandchild. We know you're going back home.
Yeah. And spending money
you're
here.
You're going back home. You're not here. You're not trying to take our jobs. And we know you probably have money. Mm-hmm. Because the thing, like, no matter what country you go to and you're American, people just assume you're rich and have a lot of money. It's like, no. I work, you know, just like you, and, like, I have to plan out my paycheck and everything. So the good thing about being American, you know, people perceive you as having money, so they tend to treat you like you have money. Mm-hmm. So they treat you better, you know, kind of like how in this country if you have money, people tend to be nicer and want to cater more to you.
Yeah.
But then you also have to make sure that you're cognizant of that because you don't want to become a target. Like, I was in Brazil this year, and, you know, there's a lot of black people in Brazil, and you can easily blend in, and they won't know the difference until you kind of start speaking. But once that, then that kind of makes you a target more for people that are going through and pickpocketing people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're not from here, then it's a little bit easier to get to you. So, you know, this is something you have to be aware of.
And how do you avoid pickpockets?
I make sure that I only take purses that actually zip up. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Brazil, I actually had a purse like you zip it up and had like a little mini lock on it, and I would lock it. Because everyone I knew down that trip, they got their phones stolen left and right. We met so many people like, can I just please use your phone to call my wife or to email them and let them know like that I'm okay. Because, you know, they would, sometimes they would snatch it from you in the street. There was a lot of big crowds and parties during Rio, like Carnival. Mm-hmm. And so people were expert pickpocketers, like, just take it. So.
Wow.
We're going to hear about that during the Olympics.
Yeah. And that's, and Brazil is an extreme case. So I just make sure I like, I tend, and pickpocketers are really good. So I take a purse. I like to take a crossbody bag. That way it's on me and it's not so easy to snatch. Because a lot of times if you just have like a little bag that's on your shoulder, it's easy to snatch those. But it's crossbody, it's more work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just keep it, like make sure I get something with a zipper. That way they just can't reach in their hand in there and get it. Like you have to kind of work for it.
What's Global Entry?
Global Entry is the best program ever. So
well,
this is where you can sign up with the State Department to get, like, pre-check. It's TSA pre-check. And so anytime you're actually coming back from a foreign trip, they have the Global Entry kiosk. All you have to do is swipe your passport, all the little forms they used to give you. Like, you remember you used to get the paper forms to check, like, no, I don't have livestock. No, I don't have over 10 grand on my purse and all that.
Uh-huh.
That's all electronic now. So you swipe your passport. You can just hit no to all questions at the same time, and you're done. So, like, now I go through customs in about 10 minutes. Takes no time. For my friends that don't have Global Entry, it takes them an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So Global Entry, I think, is around, like, $87 right now, or it might have went up to $99. But with Global Entry, you automatically get TSA pre-check.
Mm-hmm.
So don't you get it, like, when you're coming through customs, and it's easy. Even if you're just traveling, you know, domestically, you automatically get that TSA pre-check on your card, and you can just breeze through airport security. So you don't have to take out your laptop. You don't have to take off your shoes, and that saves me so much time. So my friends, they have to get to the airport, you know, an hour and a half early just to go through the TSA lines, especially during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through in 5 minutes. So if you can get Global Entry, I definitely recommend filling out for it. It's going to save you so much time. It is worth the $87 or $99 it is right now. And it lasts for 4 or 5 years.
Now, I know so, American Express offers a program similar to that. Who would people go through to?
You can go to state.gov,
okay,
like the actual travel.state.gov website,
mm-hmm,
and start to apply for Global Entry. There are two programs. There's Global Entry, and then there's TSA PreCheck. TSA PreCheck, I think, is like $70, and you notice like a lot of airlines that are offering that now just to kind of help with the security lines this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would go with Global Entry because when you get Global Entry, you also get it for international, so when you come through customs, and also you get it for domestic, so you automatically get the TSA PreCheck added in there. So go with the Global Entry because then you get the international and domestic.
What are you?
Once you get that.
Go on.
Oh, once you get that program, what you do is, like, you know, if you have any frequent flyer programs you're a part of, you just go ahead and add that number to your profile, and automatically you have it every time you fly. And a lot of times they actually apply it to other people that are flying with you. So a lot of times I fly with my grandma for domestic trips. Like, she'll come along with me. She's actually with me right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you heard coughing in the background. when we went to New York yesterday from Dallas, I have the pre-check. And so when I booked my ticket, I booked her ticket along with mine, and so she automatically got it, and we both breezed through security. So it's really nice.
What are your basic requirements when you're picking a lodge, and how many frills do you need? What don't you need? What are the trade-offs for the cost and that sort of thing? How do you roll in terms of a facility that you're going to be living in for a temporary period of time?
Yeah. So my biggest thing is location. So I'm willing to spend more money if I can be in the middle of the city where everything is going on and it's easy to get around. That way I don't have to worry about cabs and dealing with the train as much. I can do more walking.
Mm-hmm.
So my number one thing is location of the hotel. Also, I like, there are hostels you can do, but I like a personal private room. I don't like sharing a room with other people. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, I've gotten older. Like, hostels when I was younger, okay, but now I need my own hotel room.
Yeah.
And just making sure that I'm in the middle of the city. So it's more about location. I do need to make sure that it has, like, a nice, clean bathroom. So I'll go on site and look at reviews. And also that it doesn't have complaints with bed bugs. I'll also go on site and look at reviews and, like, the bed bug websites. Just to make sure that I don't have, I'm not bringing anything home with me that didn't come with me.
Mm-hmm. And last question. Have you been to any Muslim countries? And what's your experience been like there, if you have?
I have. So I went to Egypt about 6 years ago, mm-hmm. and I had a good time. Like, they're very respectful towards women. People don't tend to bother you. When I'm in a country, I like to do as they do. So, like, I did wear a head covering, and I didn't wear, like, you know, like short sleeves or short shorts. Like, I actually wore pants and, like, a long sleeve, like, little top over it.
Uh-huh.
And I was, like, I didn't have any problems at all. Like, I really enjoyed it. So don't be worried to travel to Muslim countries and just dress more conservatively. And then you'll notice the men dress that way, too. Like, men don't have on shorts or, you know, really short sleeves or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think here in America, we tend to get that media think of, like, oh, you're going to be treated horribly as a woman and people are going to hate you. But you won't have the problems. Like, if you dress modestly and you're covered and mostly everybody else who's there will be covered, you will be fine. No one's really going to bother you.
That's about respecting the customs of the land. So if you want to go to Egypt and wear your Daisy Dukes, you could have a little bit of a situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
wear your Daisy
leave
Dukes.
Those
you know,
home.
You go to the beach, go to the Caribbean where, you know, everybody's wearing their Daisy Dukes.
Exactly.
You're going to cover more. And actually, it works in your favor, too, because the sun here is so hot. So it was nice actually having on clothes because it covered and kept you from, like, burning.
Sure.
So, you know, you just kind of follow the customs of the area, and you'll notice you'll be much more accepted, and people will be friendly towards you,
mm-hmm.
and you won't have the problem. So
you're listening to Frank. Go on.
It's like, I like traveling to the Muslim countries. Like, I haven't any problems. So I'll be going to Dubai next year. So
nice.
It'll be interesting to see how that is.
Nice. You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with international travel blogger Jennifer Ward. Jennifer's been schooling us on the ways of the world from a well-traveled experience. Jennifer, one more time, how can our listeners find you and what you're up to?
So they can find me at wheresjennifer.com, and right now I'm just trying to travel as much as I possibly can.
Along today's journey, we've discussed traveling and flying on a budget, traveling as a woman, and travel etiquette. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guest, Jennifer Ward. You've been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. It's always my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr. That's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.